time for the easiest part of any coach's job, the cuts.
Coaches, do not come for us in the comments over the intro grab. This is a stressful time of year and we are trying to add some humour to it with some Simpsons references. I'm Rob Calder, once again, joined by Zoe Carr. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you for having me.
Joined by Nathan Cooper-Brown. Unfortunately, Coops was a late scratching. Having done four podcasts in a row, he drew the line at five and couldn't do it today, unfortunately. This is going to be, I don't know if it's going to be quicker or not, given there's only two of us on this one. There'll be some, obviously, opinions that we usually share in our household, but that can be
which
expanded
is dangerous.
Out. You never really know how that's going to look. But, coaches, thanks for joining us. As we'll get into the podcast topic in a little bit, which is running selection trials and team selection in general. Once again, if you can follow along on the handle on X and Instagram, so the @TalkingSplit handle would be fantastic. We're getting some more stuff up on those socials as best we possibly can. Every Friday, the podcast will go up on there. Every Monday, a new drill will go up on there. And there'll be some stuff just in between that goes on during the week that we'll post about, depending on how it's going for coaches in that sort of world. So that's what we're after on that. So if you're able to like, share, subscribe, all those sorts of things, that would be fantastic on that end. We'll jump straight in, though, Zoe, into coach shout-outs.
You know you make me want to have my coaches, have my coaches, have my coaches.
One of the worst intros of all the intros, I've got to say.
We've got a new one later too.
Oh, good.
It's a little better than that, to be fair. There's no AI involved with it, but new segment coming up later on in the podcast. So we'll see how you assess our jingle skills on that one. But coach shout out this week, the great man himself, Warren Brown. So Zoe, you ran a coach PD session on Sunday for your country coaches just at a state basketball centre. So we had 10 coaches coming from all over different parts of the state. Did some work about watching film, what we would be looking for in games, some coaching adjustments, those sorts of things. But the great Warren Brown came in and delivered what can only be described as a clinic on all things sports code.
Yeah, he was unbelievable. And one of the best parts about Wazzo is, you know, you ask for help and there he is. You know, like I didn't have to beg him or bribe him or anything. And even when I gave him what could only be described as a small thank you gift at the end, he was embarrassed to take it. So, but just the wealth of knowledge that he has and his willingness to share it is something that, you know, I'd like to hope that all coaches reach that level of sharing and giving to others, because I know all 10 of those coaches walked out of there better and having a greater understanding of sports code, which can be quite overwhelming when you first look at it. So his ability to just come in and show that it's not that scary, even though once you see his code window, that is very scary.
Yeah, that freaks some people out.
But and just give them the basics on how they can be successful and then, you know, add to it as they go and as they get better. So, yeah, he's just a brilliant human being and I can't thank him enough.
And his knowledge of sports code is next level. So, I mean, for those of you that don't know Warren Brown or what sports code is, so sports code is a video editing program. It's owned by Huddle. And it is the most probably customizable program that's out there at the moment. So a lot of our high performance teams use it and those sorts of things. So vital that our coaches understand how to use it if you want to progress with your coaching. It's difficult because it is an expensive program, but it is an investment into your own coaching that if you can get good at it, it is something that will save you a lot of time, stress, and those sorts of things when you get into a tournament situation or even in season. And for a lot of coaches, it is really daunting that they walk in there the first time and it's like, I don't know how this is going to go. And that's even just registering the license code for a few of them. It's like, how do you spell basketball again? That was an issue that we had with one of our coaches. But it is that kind of thing too, where he was able to just not dumb it down. It's not quite the right word, but understand the basics of, look, here's how you would go about it. Because he's been through so many situations where he's used it, whether it be tournament play, whether it be seasons, whether it be training sessions, games, those sorts of things, he just knows. And it was interesting talking to Woz. He's like, this is the first time I've really had to teach it. Like, it's one of those things where I know what I'm supposed to do, so I just go and do it. But I've never had to explain it to other people. And I think as coaches, we can get caught in that world a lot where it's like, we just expect our players to know what flare screens are. So I will just flare that and then we'll slip out of this. And then the kids are looking at us like, what are you talking about? I don't know. So it's really interesting to see how someone at that level is able to then go and teach other people down the line.
Yeah. And for coaches, you know, it is something if you are looking to get to the next level, whether it be state teams, junior Australian teams and beyond, you need to know how to use this. This will get you jobs if you've got a solid knowledge of this. So there is a barrier of the price because obviously you need the subscription, but you also need a Mac computer. So if that's not what you work off at the moment, there's a fairly large outlay right there. But once you then get past that, it can be really, really helpful. And as you mentioned, Rob, save a lot of time when you're in tournament play to be able to not have to watch. Basically, it clips out all the rubbish and puts them into sections that you want to see. So if you just want to watch all of your offense, you can just watch every possession where you had the ball and you were in offense, and it just saves you a lot of time and you can pick out what you want from there. So I'd highly encourage coaches that are looking to progress to really get into it and start seeing what it's like and how to use it and just practicing. You don't have to go to Warren Brown levels from the start. You just go to a basic level that works for you and then build.
Yeah, and you can contact Warren Brown on 04. No, I won't do that to you. But, you know, there are plenty of people out there that are willing to help in that sort of world. But it is one of those things that you do need to invest time because it is a skill in itself. It is it's something that doesn't come easily for a lot of people, especially the older coaches that may not be as great with computers as the younger coaches that are coming into the pathway. You need to be across this sort of stuff too, because players are asking for more and more feedback. They want to see examples. As Warren mentioned on Sunday, a lot of our kids are visual learners. They need to see it before they can really understand it. And if you can't use video to really do that for them, you're going to be in a little bit of trouble there. So it is something that would certainly recommend coaches get invested in. And I'm sure we'll talk about video and all that sort of stuff in another podcast down the road somewhere. But big thanks to Warren Brown for jumping that, and thanks to the 10 coaches for coming along on the day as well. So it was great to have them all involved. All right, this is the chaotic time of year when finals are starting and some are in, some are out. Some have got an eye on what trials are going to look like already. Some don't even want to think about trials. Some have got potentially under 14 or under 18 championships to go on in between. There's just so much going on this time of year. But one of the big stresses for a lot of people, I find, is team selection and how to run a trial in the first place. And this is kind of your world a little bit too, Zoe, because you obviously have to run a lot of trials as part of your role. But for those of us that maybe aren't in that high-performance world, we'll sort of stretch it out a little bit as to where we can get it to in the VJBL space. Do you have the same level of resources, those types of things as well? So there's a lot of stuff that can go into this. So we don't know how long this is going to go for. This could be anything. But there's a lot of stuff that potentially we'll hit on that you may sit there and say, I don't see the point of that, and that's okay. There's no problem with that. You might sit there and say, look, I think I've got a better way of doing this. Again, no problems at all with that. If you've got a better way, by all means, let us know. Yeah. We're always open to hearing something in that sort of space, because nobody is naive enough to sit here and say everyone gets it right all of the time. Yeah. There's a lot of revisionist history where people can say after the fact, oh, they should have picked this kid, or this should have been done differently. After the fact, it is easy. Like, no one's ever wrong after that. But when you're in the hot seat where you've got to pick a team of kids and making sure that it all runs effectively, you know, I don't think anyone really does it well necessarily. There's always extra stuff that's involved with that.
Well, and especially when you're talking about the VJBL, and I think we've spoken about this before, you're trying to forecast 11 months ahead of time. So, you know, the kids grow. You know, especially in juniors, kids grow at different rates. They improve at different rates. So, you know, you are kind of being set up to fail a little bit by having to pick your team so early. The best you can do is have the best amount of data available to you, so then you at least can stand by your selections and, of course, have your, I suppose, armor for when, you know, you are getting questioned. I know I've been questioned not only by parents, because we all expect to be questioned by parents, but I've been questioned by associations before as well, clubs at a junior level, of who I've picked and, you know, yeah, threats to take it further and all this sort of stuff. So if you're backed up with your data, then that stuff can't stand up against you and you can just get on with coaching your team.
Yeah, and there are different levels of biases involved, obviously. There are going to be parent coaches involved, which creates a new, different problem, so to speak, because, one, we need them. So with the amount of kids, like, there will be, again, record numbers of kids at trials I would anticipate this year, because every year it seems to be going up and up and up with the amount of kids that trial. We simply don't have enough coaches to get all the way down to potentially like an eighth team that some associations will have at their sort of disposal. So there will be parent coaches in there, but with that creates, not problems is probably not quite the right word, but just a complication of, look, can we talk about where this child fits without the parent getting upset, or, you know, are they pushing their kid or are they downplaying their kid to potentially go down to a lower team? What happens? Like, I remember when I was the director of coaching once, I got in trouble because I picked three kids whose parents are coaches in the one team, and I got smacked for it because it's like, well, we miss out on two coaches now. It's like, hold on, if this kid's good enough to make the twos.
The three kids come first. Yeah,
yeah, we can't be shafting one of these kids down to the fours just because their parents are going to coach. So it's one of those sort of things that you do have to pay attention to, because I think it is. Most people will know the team they're coaching coming up, but those types of things where it's like, well, look, you know, as a parent, you might go wherever your child falls, and wherever they fall, well, that's where you coach. But that might mean that someone that was coaching the fours is now coaching the threes, or had the twos and is now the fours, those types of things too.
If you have a parent coach, if you're a coordinator or a DOC or something like that, and you know that there's going to be a parent that's going to coach wherever their child falls, they can't be involved in trials. You have to pick where that child goes. So then, again, it takes away that angst of they only made it because, you know, they had that this coach was going to coach the threes, and so then that they put the kid in there because of that, not because he's good enough or she's good enough. So get rid of that for that parent coach, and you pick where they go, and then the coach can just coach.
Jump in and coach.
Yeah. I know from a coaching perspective, it's hard to let that go as well of, you know, no, I want to pick my team. But ultimately, when there is a little bit of a conflict of interest there, and being a parent coach is a conflict of interest, that's something you have to set aside for the greater good. And then you can, as I said, get on to just coaching your team once you get it.
Yeah, and it probably alleviates a lot of pressure on the parent too, that doesn't want to like push their kid or force their kid into a team that, geez, I think they might be able to play in the twos or the threes, but I don't really know if they can play in the twos. But I don't want to say that, so I'll play conservative, so I'll go the unders, when you've kind of disadvantaged the kid in that situation too. So you do have to be a little bit careful as to what that looks like. I know I've done it in the past where we've had a parent coach. We did exactly what you were talking about, where it's like, hey, you stay out of this. We'll pick the teams as to where we pick the teams. As it turns out, that kid, I think, made the twos, I think, off the top of my head. So it's like, well, okay, they were the seventh pick in the twos. You've now got the last three selections as the parent coach. It's like, look, we anticipate your child will make the twos. This is where we sort of view them. Here are the pool of players left afterwards. You get to pick those last ones, but we're not having you pick the first ones before that. So just to try and take a little bit of stress off in that world too.
While still giving them some ownership of their own team.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's certainly not to say that there are bad parent coaches out there, because there are plenty of parents out there that know exactly what they're doing. They're good coaches. They're able to do it and those sorts of things. But again, the optics of it, you want to try and remove that as best you possibly can. And I know it's a big part of it when we do selections in, whether it be Jamboree, whether it be for FDP and skills days and those types of things. We rely on parent coaches to come and help out on the day. And as soon as we start talking about selection, it's like, hey, look, can you please leave the room whilst we discuss your child in this world too? So I think it's the fair thing to do for both, to just kind of keep it out. While we're on the topic of parents, open or closed trials, where do you sit on that?
Well, I don't have a problem with parents being in the venue, you know, during the trials, from a them watching, or, you know, ultimate. I'm at a point now, and it may sound a bit arrogant, but when I make selections, I know I've made selections, and I'm okay with that. So I don't really care if they're watching and have their opinions and that sort of stuff. That's not why I would ever consider closing a trial. I have seen over my time a lot of trials, different, open and close. And the closed trials, the athletes themselves just seem so much calmer. They seem more relaxed, able to just get into the flow of the trial and do their best. The problem that comes with that is obviously from a child safety perspective, but also what message goes back to a parent, and then you don't have anybody there to back that up. So I would never encourage closed trials, as great as they can be, more so from allowing the athletes to perform, because there are some parents that put an exceptional amount of pressure, and whether they know it or not, on their children.
To an already tense situation. Yeah. Like, if we think the kids aren't thinking about trials and what's coming up, we're kidding ourselves.
Exactly. Like, so, yeah, having that removed, it can just make everything just work a little bit better. But yeah, unfortunately in this day and age, it needs to be, you have to have open trials and allow people the opportunity. Now, if they don't want to stay, yeah, that's okay.
No problems. Yeah.
You know, but it is one of the things that having them there can be helpful. Again, I mentioned already about, you know, if you've got your data and you understand your selections and you are confident in your selections, when a question inevitably comes of why not, or why, the first question you can ask is, were you at trials? Because you can't ask that if you've closed the session. And then if they haven't been at the trials, they probably don't really have a leg to stand on of asking why and why not, because they weren't there to see it. So you don't really have to dig into your data. But if they were there, then you can go through, you know, your reasons and your feedback. When I say reasons, I don't mean reasons. I don't believe you should have to justify anything, but you should have to deliver feedback as to what the athlete can do to maybe, like, if they've made the twos, make the ones next time, or, you know, if they've missed out, make the program next time, or things like that.
So when we talk open and closed trials, I mean, it's a great point. And you made another point in there, which I'll come back to in a second. But open trials are great from a transparency perspective. Mm. What I would recommend you do is have all the parents in one central location, though.
Yeah.
So whether, if you have like a three-court stadium, hey, can we have all the parents over on court one in the stand? If you want to stick around and watch, just so that way the coaches do have that little bit of freedom to be able to discuss a player over on court two and three without having to look over their shoulder as to, look, is that kid's parent sitting right there? But you've got to be able to speak.
You've got to be
fairly
able to speak
openly.
Absolutely. And that's another point. Like, there's got to be confidentiality within the selection group as well, or basket coaches, or whoever happens to be involved in the trial. You have to be able to trust that whatever you say goes nowhere, because the second it goes anywhere, the integrity of the selection process has been tampered with,
compromised. Yep.
And that's when real problems start. So if you are attending a trial, any trial, club, our programs, state trials, whatever it might be, you must adhere to that. You must keep the confidentiality of that room or the court or wherever it is that you have those discussions, because if you don't, you won't be invited back.
Yeah, it's a valid point. Now, you made a point before about how trials went and that's how selections play out. How much of where kids end up do you think is based on their trial versus past history of what's happened the season before?
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously under 12s is very different.
Yeah, it's a raffle.
Yeah. But past performance or body of work does come into it.
Yep.
And it should, because whilst we need to learn that the athletes need to learn how to trial if they want to progress, because, you know, the best teams to make come off a trial. So you need to be able to perform. But there also needs to be an understanding of that body of work and what they can and can't do before the trial starts. So then if it just happens to be an off day, they're not getting penalised for that, or an off couple of weeks. You know, we also don't know, walking into these trials, what's going on in their home life, or what's going on in their life in general. There could be major things going on that are affecting their ability to perform. So if we go off just those trials, whether it be like some of the clubs that I've seen that are, you know, I think they're three trials, maybe four, which I think is great. Beyond that, I think we're starting to get a little bit ridiculous, because I know numbers, there are big numbers and things like that, but also considering the anxiety of the athletes waiting, you know, six, 7 weeks, like,
yeah, it's a long time.
Yeah, to find out whether they've made a team and continually show up, and each session becomes more and more just anxiety ridden. So the ones that get it done quickly, I applaud you, well done. If we had access to all of that information, then we probably wouldn't need body of work, but we don't have access to that. So, you know, put it this way, think about the 92 Dream Team. Jordan goes in for a trial and is terrible. Are you not picking him? Like, it, yeah. You know, it's
a tough one, because the argument usually comes back, well, and it's usually from someone that's maybe missed out, but my child trial better.
Mm.
And so what's the point of trials if we're not going to, you know, go off the trial? It's like, yeah, okay. But I would suggest that the trial is there to validate what you already know. You should have really have a pretty good idea coming into a trial who you're picking, especially in
particularly
those
particularly your
two,
top teams. Yeah,
those first two teams, not that they should be set in stone, but by the end of that first session, you should probably have your first two teams picked, because your first team coach should have enough data on who coached them last year. Have I spoken to the other coaches that had them? Do I know roughly what the balance is going to look like? They should have really 12 to 13 kids going into that first trial before you've even started. Roughly, that's what I'm going to base this on.
Mm.
From there, yeah, there's some outliers for sure, where there might be a kid that walks into your trial that is either bigger, stronger, dominant, whatever, that you now need to start considering. So that number may expand out, but you should roughly know, I think, where you're going to potentially be sitting on that one, because you've done your homework. You talk about the data. Talk to the other coaches. Find out what they're like. Find out.
Watch their games.
Yeah,
watch,
those sorts
you know,
of things.
Whatever
like,
it is.
There's a way to get it done. Like, I know I've done it in the past where I was coaching a team and I asked the other coach, hey, can I just get a copy of one of your games? Just so I can go back and have a look at, you, I'm going to be considering some of these three or four players. Can I just have a look at what they look like for you? And get that feedback as well. I think that's a healthy thing to do.
Yeah, and without you there too is really good, because kids will, if they know that you're a state coach or you're a high performance coach or you're a, you know, something that they're striving to make, you're in charge of that in some way, you walk into the venue and they spot you, and they spot you so much quicker than
incredible.
They used to. Their game changes, the way they play changes. What's really cool to know is, what are they like when you're not there? Because that's the actual player you're going to end up with from week to week in whatever program we're talking about. But it's I think getting that information and speaking to other coaches is pivotal to making sure that your selections are what they need to be. Now, again, we've talked about it on the pod, I think, regularly, about how, you know, your first seven spots are probably no-brainers.
Yep.
You know,
would pick those kids.
Yeah, everyone would pick those kids. Yep. So those last few spots, again, body of work from the kids that you would expect to make it and the kids that are on the bubble, like that are pushing to try and make it, come into play, and then the trial comes into play. And then you've got to weigh up, you know, which one outweighs the other in the time. And it could be that somebody misses out because of another player blends well with the other seven,
matters.
You know. Yeah. Or again, I've said it before, people may disagree, but I still stand by it when I've made these selections. I've picked players that are happy to play in the five to keep the athletic player that has a chance to progress, say, in the three. So that comes into it as well. And, yeah, it's tough. It's like a big jigsaw puzzle. But the real challenge is, if you're a first team, get that done quickly, as quickly as possible, especially if you're in a program that has high numbers. Because the cascade that happens, you know, the second team is waiting for you to pick yours so they know what they have to pick from. And then on and on and on. And if you're one of those clubs that has, you know, eight teams in an age group, the eighth coach is sitting there going, come on, guys.
Yep. Like, oh, without a doubt, yeah. A little bit of story time in this world. I nearly quit being a VJBL coach before I'd even started. So when I was first involved, I think I was coaching a second team under 14 girls. The coach that was coaching the 14 ones took forever. And I think we only had three teams in the age group at that stage because it was like literally 20 plus years ago. But the coach just went back and forth and deliberated, oh, I'm going to take this kid. It's like, all right, no worries, take him. Like, not a problem on my end, but I want to be able to pick my team so that the threes coach can pick their team. Yeah, I've changed my mind because it's now a Wednesday, so I want to go back the other way. This happened, without a word of a lie, nearly half a dozen to a dozen times. They went back and forth, and it's like, hey, you've got 25 minutes to make your selection. Otherwise, you're looking for a new coach because I can't keep going through this because, yes, it impacts on me, but now it impacts down the line somewhere as well because who you take out of my team, whether it be the guard or the big, that will impact on who's at the end of my roster for the guard or the big, which now impacts on the next coach down the line. So just have a bit of consideration for those that are coaching further down. First team coach, you have the easy job. Just go pick the best kids to help you progress where you possibly can. Now, whether they're the best kids now or whether they're the best kids in the future.
Pick that's the big kids.
Well, that helps too. But it is one of those things where, you know, you've got to be considerate of others that are coaching down the line because, like I said, you know, potentially if you're down at an eighth team, imagine what that's like.
Mm.
And when you get down to that eighth team, you're potentially not cutting one kid. You're potentially cutting 40 kids because that's what there is at the bottom. When you've got big numbers coming into trials, that number gets bigger down the bottom end of it. So it's difficult to get to that stage.
And they are the hardest teams to pick
yep.
because there's probably not a lot of difference in skill set once you start getting down to those lower teams. So they need more time. They need to be able to have time to see who they're going to pick and run their trials with the kids that they have available to pick from. So, yeah, the quicker you can get there, the better. Understanding of, you know, that it's difficult. And
yeah, the need for you accuracy
make
matters.
You want to make sure you get it right. But, again, that's where the body of work comes in as well and collating that data from other coaches or, you know, watching their games or you know, however that you see it as to collecting that. That's where that helps save you so much time because you can then – sort of rock in with a really good idea. Again, keep your mind open because someone might walk through your door that you weren't expecting. It absolutely blows you away. And, you know, so keep your mind open. You're certainly not walking into the first trial going, here's my 10. But, yeah, I think it's, you know, if you can get it done in two trials, that'll go a long way into keeping the people that are – and. This might be a controversial take, but the people that are not coaching the first teams are the most important coaches.
Yep.
You will always find people willing and wanting to coach the first team. Everyone wants to coach a first team. Those that have the ability and the want to take a fives or something, they are the most important because they're not, you know, you can't just walk outside and find them.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
And look,
to be honest, we've both been in this situation where the most parent complaints come from don't tend to be the first, second teams. Mm. They tend to be lower down because you've got maybe a less experienced coach, maybe less experienced parents that aren't quite aware of what the whole rep program looks like. They're more likely to be multi-sport kids where they have a lot of different things going on, so consequently they can miss training sessions, whatever the case may be. So when you have experienced coaches coaching further down in the team numbers, geez, that makes life easy as a director of coaching. And honestly, we can't thank them enough because without them, you know, there's a whole bunch of kids that don't have
that
a game
don't
of
get
basketball.
To play. Exactly. Our sport is almost on the back of those coaches.
Absolutely
like,
is.
Those coaches and domestic coaches, we don't have the numbers, which means we don't have the facilities. I mean, we don't have the facilities, but, you know, we don't have what we at least have now. We don't have, you know, just opportunities, like so many opportunities for kids to get to play sport and a sport that they love. If all those coaches go away, that's it.
Yep.
The sport's done. So, it's something to keep in mind if you are a first, even a second team coach, as you're making your selections, really look out for those that are coaching the teams below you because they're the real MVPs.
Yeah, it's exactly right, though. But it is also one of those things you've got to be cognizant of, that those coaches that are coaching down that low probably have a good chunk of bottom age kids in their age group as well. Obviously, we do that two-year age group. There's pros and cons to maybe going to 1 year as to whether we want to go 12, 13, 14, 15. I kind of like the idea of at least two. I'd maybe even like to go three after, you know, under 16.
Do you know what I would like? I would really like a grade on its own where it is whatever you want.
Yeah, okay.
So you could have 18s, 14s, and you can mesh them together and just play. Yep. So your best kids together from each age group gives more opportunity for other kids to make a first team, because we know that, like, we've all heard the stories of, oh, they didn't make the first team, so they left and went to another club but played in a lower grade, but they made the first team. The first team is really important. So more opportunities for that, but it helps get our best players, our best athletes or highest skilled athletes better. Yep. I think that'd be so cool.
It would be. And Coops is going to be devastated. He's missed an episode where we're going to talk about biobanding. But it genuinely is, where it's the possibility for maybe some of our younger kids are physically ready to go and play and be challenged up age groups, but they can't, obviously, just due to age restrictions and those sorts of things. So it does open the possibility. Logistical nightmare.
Oh, like, huge.
I'm going to sit there and say,
you'd have to say, like, it all games played out of SBC or MSAC or something like that, because it'd be mental.
Yep.
But what it would also give you is that if you do have a young athlete that's sort of grown early, but you know is showing signs of not growing anymore, you put them in a group with older players, now all of a sudden they're in the position that they should be instead of the position that they would be in their own age group.
Yep.
And they've got more of a chance. Yep. Gives them more of a chance.
But it goes back the other way too. Like, you might have a kid that has grown early but is physically and mentally very immature.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, they just don't have the muscle mass or anything like that. Could you play them down an age group? Yeah. Potentially. So it's like, hey, go and experience some success against kids that are maybe mentally on the same level as you until you just mature a little bit more, and then you can come back into your age group. Like, they're, God, we can go on for this for ages, but this is very much we thought we were going with how to run a selection trial. But
a little insight into what our conversations are like.
Yeah, it goes off on various tangents.
Never stay on track.
Various tangents are fairly regular, but these are sort of the things that you do need to take into consideration as well, because if you are coaching in an age group where you've got a good chunk of the bottom age kids, they can be down in the fours and the fives, and it's your job to develop those kids, because they might be in the ones next year because the first three teams is filled with top age athletes.
Yeah.
So that does happen. So please don't discount the whole, you're just the fives coach.
Yeah.
No such thing as just the fives coach. The fives coach is just as important, if not more important, than the ones coach in that world. We've gone way past where I thought we were going to start with this.
I have a question for you, though.
Yeah, okay.
Where do you sit on, say, putting, you know, the best kids, if there are the best bottom ages that can make the ones and will play, they make that, all the other best bottom ages being in a team together?
Not a believer. Okay. No, I'm best fit for best kid, because I think by the time we go down that path of, oh, we're just going to put all the other bottom ages in this team, that's a bit dangerous, because there might be a couple that are capable of playing higher and playing higher. So let them go experience higher. Mm. And look, don't get me wrong, I've been that jerk coach before where it's like, hey, I just want the bottom age 12s. Like, and if that means I lose a couple of top ages to get that are better to get the bottom ages in, I'm okay with that. I've certainly been that person. Do I necessarily agree with myself at times? Not all the time. And again, you're getting a bit of insight into what goes through my head at times. But it is one of those areas too where I don't believe in taking a bottom age kid just so you can say you've taken a bottom age kid, say in the ones or the twos, especially if they're not going to play. That for me is the big catalyst right away is, look, take them if you're going to play them, but if you're not going to play them, let them go to where they will play in that space. Probably easier to age group in under 12s because you've got kids that are freshies coming into the program for the first time that, you know, maybe just bottom age kids. You'll potentially have some kids that have played as like triple bottom age or something like that in the program who are maybe ready because they've seen half of Victoria as they drive around on a Friday night. You know, there are kids that walk in a state basketball center and you've got to pick their jaw up off the floor because they walk in there and like, my God, I've never seen anything like this before. By the time you've come in here five or six times, it's still pretty cool, but you walk in and they go, oh, cool.
Yeah. Been here before.
Yeah. Court 14. Like, no worries. Away I go. It's those sorts of things. So For mine, not a big believer in age group coaching because I hear it from coaches all the time. Oh, I've got the bottom age, the first bottom age group. It's like, okay, so what team number is that? Oh, the fives. It's like, yeah, not quite the same thing. But yeah. I'm a believer in put them where is best fit for them, regardless of age.
I think if you are going to go down that road, you have to make sure you get them and I don't know if they still do this anymore, but like pre-grading games. So if they do have the ability to play higher, so particularly in 12s, they do have the ability to play higher. They're given that opportunity because often, you know, it's the fives or the sixes or something like that. And as a result, they get put, where it is expected that a 12 fives would be. If they're better than that, you need to make sure they're given the opportunity to try and start grading higher. So then they can get as high as they are. The one thing about the grading map is that it does end up with teams where they should be.
Yep. I know it feels provided, like it's for eternity, but generally,
but that's why I think it does, because it is really precise but it will end up with everyone where they should be, provided you start your grading where you should start. So just be on the front foot with that.
It does happen a fair bit. I was talking to a coach yesterday who I think for the third time since I've known him has graded higher or equal to the team above him.
Yeah.
So even when you get into team selection, there are things that just don't quite line up or, you know, one team simply kind of clicks a little better than the other team. And you know, that happens at times as well. Yep. It's, you know, grading is a really vicious beast at times where you lose one game and all of a sudden you've dropped four grades, but you win six and you haven't moved anywhere. Like it can feel like that at times as you go through it, but that's kind of what grading is for, is to test out where you should be.
Yep.
Going right the way back to the very start with this.
Where we should have started.
Yeah, we probably should have. Like, there was an on-ramp early that we missed, and consequently we've somehow gone like full Dukes of Hazzard and found a ramp somewhere and ended up on Eastlink. But before you even start trials, are you an advocate for, say, like a new player trial or something like that, just to give those kids a chance?
Yeah, like a domestic trial.
Yep.
So, you know, if you're a kid that's only played domestic, harder in the older age groups because there's probably not as many that, you know, either haven't made the jump already or that want to make the jump, but definitely in the younger age groups, having an opportunity for them to be able to experience a trial probably with athletes around about their same level.
Yep.
And having the same experience too. So then you can, you know, you can find out who you want to progress to the next level. And then when they come in with the kids that have played rep before, they've at least been to a trial before, so it's not quite so daunting. Yeah,
you've got a bit of a benchmark for them to know, hey, this kid was really good in the domestic trial.
Yep.
Let's have a look at him against, you know, or her against other kids that are already there and where they're at with it. So I think it's a really good way to do it. If you are in charge of running those trials, make sure you take notes. Because kids will obviously want feedback as to why they're not progressing or what they can do better when they get into the main trial. We have a bit of a duty, I think, to give them some feedback in that space as to, well, look, here are the things I think you can work on. If you are just one of 80 kids and it's almost like, hey, pay your money as you walk through the door, catch you later, sorry you've missed out, that's a really negative experience. Yeah. And that's not what we want what is ultimately our members experiencing as players.
Yeah, and similar to what you said before, perception is reality. So if as a coaching group you're just standing together watching one court while another court is going on behind you, or another two courts, three courts, whatever, is going on behind you, and you don't get eyes on that, that will be noticed. And it might be that you don't actually have to see those courts. I remember being a first team coach in the junior space, and there was, you know, as you start to sort of shape your trials, you know, ones and twos squad on one court, you know, threes and fours on another, fives and sixes on another. And I still went down and watched the 5-6 court, because the perception is, oh, well, at least the first team coach has seen our kids.
Yep.
And if you just ignore them, then that's where, again, where problems come in, especially if you've got the, you know, the 1-2 court and you don't look at the 3-4.
Yep.
Like it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is really, it's opening up a can of worms that you just don't need, and every kid deserves to be looked at. So, sure. You know, I think it's hard, especially for kids when, you know, I believe you have to start shaping your trial like that, but definitely after your first trial, because if you've got everybody in together, it's really hard to see who's going to be able to rise above. Like if you've got one kid from the ones with kids that are likely going to make the fives and sixes, the one kid from the ones may stand out but also may really struggle because they don't have the athletes around them to make them look better. Whereas a kid that's probably more projected for the twos could look amazing because they're surrounded by the other kids that are going to make the ones. So I think as hard as it is, and, you know, the drop is hilarious with Homer Simpson, but that is not how we feel as coaches of, you know, oh, cool, we get to cut kids. It's not that. It is hard, but it's really hard for the athlete to, say, go from a 1-2 court and be moved to a 3-4 court.
Yeah. And they know.
And they know. Everybody knows.
They're aware.
So the least you can do is give them that respect by moving them there but still watching them, because you could move them there and they could still be above that and they might need to go back, and it helps you just decide where they should sit. But, you know, if you ignore that, that's, one, disrespectful to the athletes, but two, it's going to open up a real can of worms for you with complaints.
Well, and in particular when you get down to talent identification as well, if you are starting to talk threes, fours, fives, sixes, sevens and eights, once the first team is picked, first team coach, boot down the other end of it, because you're potentially going to have to start making decisions on which kids stay in the program, which kids, you know, what's the difference between a sixth player and a seventh player? You know, not a lot in a lot of cases. You might have to weigh in on some selection discussions. Yep. And if you haven't seen those kids, or if you don't know what you're looking for, and again, you might have a less experienced coach down there that doesn't know what they're looking for necessarily, and you can sit there and say, hey, look what this kid does defensively. Like, they're always there on the catch. They're not there. You know, they're not moving on the catch. They're already there on the catch. That's something that might be the difference between a kid that makes a sixes and a sevens. So have some input into those as well. Like, once you get your team picked, you don't need to see them again. Like, you're good with those kids. You know what your trials are going
to
look like.
You're about to have 11 months with them.
Exactly. Like,
give up a couple of weeks.
Go help out. But I would also recommend, if you can get some additional coaches to help out with your trials, please do. Just people that are content to run a basket that aren't involved necessarily in selections. Because one of the hardest things to do is run a basket at the same time as you're making selections for teams.
Yeah.
Because now you're worried about, is the drill running correctly? Am I seeing everything I need to see? But I want to go and look at that court, but I can't because they've already got a coach over there, but now there's no coach here. If you can get some additional bodies, so whether it be your 12s coaches come in and help the 14s, your 14s help the 16s, 16s help the 18s, 18s back to the 12s, that might be a really easy way of just making sure the coaches that are selecting teams can actually select teams, but someone else is going to run the content for you, because that just solves so many problems, I find, when you just know, hey, can you take care of this for me? I've got to go and look at this kid over on the other court just to make sure I'm not, you know, bypassing them. I need to see them.
Yeah.
And part of that too, so when we go back to the start, if I can give any advice to administrators out there that are in this world, because selections should be open with registration process, so you know who's coming. There will always be some kids walking on the day that didn't register for whatever reason. We get it.
Leave a couple of Excel
rows. Leave that for a start. You cannot number these kids enough. Like, the amount of times I've gone to a trial and they've gone right leg, left arm with the numbering, and it's like, guys, can you just...
like, write it on their forehead if you have to.
I said that to a kid once and he's like, no worries, I'll get it done. Like, I will put my my number on my forehead, and it's like, you know what, I'm going to remember you as 22 the whole time.
And I'm going to pick like you. No.
I like that you've committed to this. But it is one of those things, you cannot number the kids enough. And look, it's hard in the younger age groups because they've got real scrawny arms. Like, it's if you have to try and get like number 88 on someone's arm and, you know, their arm is about, you know, 4 centimetres all the way around, it's going to be tough. But you cannot overnumber the kids. Kids are making it hard because they're wearing like leg sleeves and all these sorts of things. It's like, come on, guys. Like, I need to be able to see who you are. you cannot number them enough. I know some clubs have gone down the photo path before, which I don't necessarily disagree with. It sort of feels like they're a criminal or something like that, holding up a little number in front of them as they're getting their picture taken. But I don't mind the idea behind it, because there are times where you can sit there and say, I don't remember number 62 at all. And then you see the picture and it's like, worries at all. But I don't think you can do photos without the numbers. Like, you need to have both if you're going to go down that path. And you better pray that you have a very willing and able administrator that is able to do all that sort of stuff quickly as well, so that by the time that you get into your selection meeting, you have the numbers that line up with the photos and you can go from there. So I think there's something to it for sure, but it is one of those areas where, you know, everyone will have a different read on what it should be. I know some clubs have gone with, like, black numbers for top-age kids, red numbers for bottom-age kids. Red numbers don't always show up on some kids, so that's difficult to see. Some have gone like a line above the number as top age, a line below the number as bottom age. Again, difficult to see. So what you do with it, look, completely up to you. I'd probably go down the path and just have everyone with the same coloured number and make it work, and just have their date of birth next to it, because that is a, I don't know, again, we've discussed this before, and it's something you're good at, Zoe, is knowing when there are kids born in those last couple of months of the year, making sure they're not lost. Because they're just physically underdeveloped, because they've had a year potentially less of growing than some kid that's born on the 3rd of January.
Yep.
You've got to be across that as a coach too. It's just making sure you know your age groups well.
Yeah, so important. Those kids that are back end of the year, I think yourself and Zepp, Mike Zeppel, when he was here, you did a bit of research on our Opals and Boomers. And then compared it with their age group in state teams, and it was something like a really high, like 80% or something high number of first 6 months in state teams. So
first
born
3 months.
First 3 months, yeah. So born between January and March. And then Opals and Boomers, it was almost like
flipped
the to the number almost of the last 3 months or last 6 months of the year. So it is, you know, you think about it, if you're born in December, you know, if they just, they held on for a little bit longer, you'd probably be the biggest kid in your age group. But it is something to consider. I'm not saying you just pick them because of that, but you must consider it. They deserve that consideration. And you might look at it and go, oh, they're on the bubble, not too sure. Then you see that they're December born and go, right, in.
Yep.
Because of if they're competing at this level, being potentially 11, 12 months younger than other people in their team, they're doing very well.
Yep.
So it is, yeah, it is definitely something I think to consider. But one of the things you mentioned before was content, Rob. What would you have as your content in a trial? Because I've seen some stuff in trials that I go, what on earth?
Yep.
And then I've seen some stuff that I'm like, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
What would you have in a trial?
I'm going to avoid anything, it's bulk shooting drills on air.
Mm.
Like, that doesn't fuss me too much. Like, there might be some contested shooting, which I'm kind of curious to be, does their technique hold up when rushed? Is something I'm certainly conscious of. So even if it was like, you have a player in the corner and a player on the 45 diagonal drift for those that want to go down that path. Defense will start on the low block with the basketball, pass it out to one of the two who can make the extra pass if they want to, and they've got to try and contest both. That's something I have interest in, is to, one, are they able to decide when they should shoot it versus when they should pass it? But two, do the shot mechanics hold up? Because very rarely do kids with good shot mechanics not translate. Like, it's one of those things. There are some shooters out there that their technique is broke, like, beyond belief, but it just goes in and it's like, yeah, but I wonder if it goes in upper level or with defense or those sorts of things. So I would stay away from the on-air shooting drills. Something contested, I'm here for, because I'm also conscious of, you may only have two courts and 80 kids. You also want them going as much as you possibly can to. You don't want them waiting around in lines. So I think something where you can get like three in, three out really quickly and just rotate through is a great way to do it. Alley drill, I've said it on here before, I believe has no place at a trial, because you don't get anything out of it. Like, it's, I don't feel like I now see that they're a better ball handler because of it, and I certainly don't see that they're a better defender because of it. So for mine, not for me. Disadvantage work, 2-on-1, 3-on-2, 4-on-3, big believer in, but I'm a big believer in that anyway. So that probably wouldn't change a huge amount from a trial to my normal team training sessions. So for mine, I like that sort of stuff. I would weight it heavily towards just gameplay.
Yeah.
And just making sure that, you know, we know what kids are like. Some are great trainers but terrible players when it gets to game situation because they just get frozen by fear. Some kids are just awful, awful trainers. And you sit there and say, oh, that kid's lazy. They don't know what they're doing. And, you know, how's this going to work? And then you watch them in a game. It's like, holy heck, where's that kid been? Like, it's those sorts of things. And we say it a lot. Like, there have been a couple of kids, in particular in your country programs, that probably don't get the credit they deserve because looking from the outside, you look at it and say, geez, I'm not really sure that they kind of fit or they're kind of there. Then you coach them. And it's like, yeah, okay, I get it now. Like, I see it. Like, I've now engaged with that kid. I've given them instruction. I see the work they do off the ball and those sorts of things. I don't think you necessarily get to do that at trials enough if you just go like content with drills. That's my concern.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the more you can get them playing, you're picking them to play games. They want to play games. So I think getting I've seen at times some, you know, 1-on-0 ball handling, you know, crossovers, then, you know, through the legs and – I personally don't think that that's helpful for a selection in particular. Get them on court, get them playing as quick as possible and see what they can do and see what decisions they can make. If they can make, you know, the I've got two on me, so I'm going to find the open player, brilliant. That kid now, that's something you want to look for. Yeah, but I don't care if they against no one can put the ball between their legs because – I want to see if they can do it against somebody, you know. So it's, you know, it's those sort of things that are that I think the quicker you can get into gameplay, the better. But again, if you're in those top level teams, so you know your first and second teams, going in with, you know, who you need to see, particularly after your first trial, who you need to see play against each other. I think is if you can go in with that already and what matchups you need. So there might be, you know, two kids going for the one position. And if they're the same sort of position, you want to see them go at each other and see, you know, who comes out on top and it might help shape your decision making.
Yep.
So, you know, having that information leading in or, you know, leading into your first trial, but definitely leading into your second trial after you've seen and you've started to shape your squads a little bit, I think is great because it also then gives kids the best opportunity to try and make the team as well.
So when we're talking gameplay at a trial in particular, would you put some structure in that they have to play with or would you just let it jungle ball and it's kind of survival of the fittest?
I'd put a little bit of structure in, but I wouldn't spend too much time on it. I certainly wouldn't have a baseline sideline.
No.
Certainly wouldn't have any of that. Just if the ball goes out of bounds, take it from the top. No problem. But I'd put something really basic in, you know, just to – because if you let it go jungle ball, your early developers in particular will dominate the ball and you won't see what else or what you can get from anybody else. So, yeah, just a basic little bit of structure. If your club has a club offense, then you should be pretty right to be able to just go straight into your trial. If not, you know – something that sort of simulates what you're going to run, but not the whole thing. Don't spend I wouldn't spend, you know, half an hour putting that in. Yep. I'd just put something in real quick. And because another part of that is seeing how quickly they can pick things up.
Yep.
So, you know, a real basic action, you know, it just might be a pass, get to the strong side corner, reverse it to the high out, play through the high post and see what happens. You know, that just might be from there.
Potentially more basic than that, like pass, cut, and does someone go on ball?
Yeah.
Like that might
anything
be enough.
Like that.
Because now you get to start to see, too, who directs traffic.
Yep.
Because I think that's important. Who breaks out of your offense really quickly? Because that's always a horrific find 6 weeks into your program when it's like, this kid will not go to the right spot no matter what I do. Good to know that early, at least, so you can put them in different positions. But I think some structure is the right way to go. Mm. I don't think we want to overdo it and say, hey, we're going to roll out our first three offenses, we're going to run for the season. That's problematic, I think, for mine. So how would you go, and you sort of touched on a little bit before, seeing kids play against each other. So the balance of, do you want kids that are competing for the same spot to play against each other, or do you want like the probables and the possibles type balance?
Yeah, so I wouldn't have all the probables in the same team because that team, again, is just going to dominate the – or should, if you've done it right, dominate the play. So again, you won't see the you know, let's say you've got, if you've got two teams of 10, for example, if you've got seven of the probables in one team and the rest are sort of fighting for those last three spots, whoever's on the probables team is going to look really
good.
Looks
pretty good, doesn't
it? Yeah. So I'd spread them out over the two groups. I'd have, yeah, if they are, let's say we've got two point guards, for example, going for a position, I'd have them match up and put them in those positions to see how they go. Can they defend each other? Can they find success? Can one find success over the other? Does one play well with, you know, a particular play? You might have like a, you know, there's a particular under 16 female athlete that plays for Sandringham or Southern, by far the best player.
Yep.
Who plays the best with her? You know, those sort of things. Who meshes well with her? Who can find her? Who complements her? All that sort of stuff sort of plays into it. Yep. And I think if, you know, again, giving them the opportunity, if you give them enough opportunity, they will almost select themselves. It's when we go in eyes closed, or, you know, not closed, but, you know, a tunnel vision, we know what we want, that's it. That's where, yeah, problems start to arise.
How would you go about pre-selecting kids when they come into a trial to go to certain courts? So as an example, you got your under-14s that are coming in. If you played in the ones or the twos in 14, or go further, ones, twos or threes in 14s last year, you're going to go to court one.
Mm-hmm.
If you were in the 12 ones, 14 fours, 12 twos, 14 fives, you're going to court two and then separating them. Like, do you think there's merit in doing it before they come in here so they know which court to go to? Because my fear is, hey, go to a court and it's chaos.
Yeah, it's very helpful to pre-allocate your courts, because also then the more you can minimize, particularly the move down, the better. So even if you have less on that one, that first court, so you're more so moving up, I think is better. I know that sounds a little bit too much care about feelings, but we've got to keep in mind some of these kids are 12 and 13. You know,
it's and live, breathe and eat it. Like, this is their whole world at the moment.
You know, we don't want to completely crush them. We want them to want to be on those courts. So it's like we said, there's probably some that you know are definitely going to be on that court. And then, yeah, move upwards rather than try and have to move down. Now, you're going to have to move some kids down. It's inevitable. Yep. But, yeah, the more you can minimise that, I think the better it is.
Yeah, and be understanding, we do have a job to do as coaches, which is pick teams as accurately as we possibly can. So, as you say, though, our job is not to do that at the expense of kids' thoughts, feelings, everything else in between. Do it with as much compassion as you possibly can, and don't have them walking out of there feeling like that was the worst experience of my life.
Yeah.
That's important. What are you using to select players? Like, is there a basis that you would use to evaluate players on, and how you would select them?
Yeah, so we have our six pillars. So everything gets based on that. So 1v1 offense, 1v1 defense, physical literacy, shooting ability, decision making, and competitiveness. And so, you know, if you're great in all of those things, chances are you're going to get picked. Nobody's really great in a junior space at all of those things. They might be good in some areas, not so good in others, but it allows you to, again, gather that data and particularly form your feedback. So if kids have missed out, the feedback can go of, you know, needs work on 1v1 defense, too many blow bys, opening the gate too often, sticking hands in at the last minute and fouling, you know, all those sort of things. That's tangible feedback that they can take away and actually work on. And it also shows that you cared enough to actually give feedback that is valuable. Writing something like needs more work on offhand. Whenever I read that, I get really annoyed because you haven't even told me which one is the offhand, which means to me you probably don't even know, and it's just a basic, you know, I'm just getting through this kind of feedback. So having something, you don't have to use those six. You can create your own.
Yep.
And whatever they are, then everything links back to that. So if any parent was to or player was to ever ask you, how come I didn't make it but so-and-so made it, you never talk about who the other athlete is or why or those sort of things. You only talk about the athlete sitting in front of you. And it's you lacked the 1v1 offensive skill set. And you might say, particularly on your left-hand side or particularly on your right-hand side, we need to develop that area of your game, both off the bounce and the finish on the rim and, you know, all those sort of things. And they walk away and go, oh, okay. they won't be happy with it. You're not going to make them happy. They've missed out. They're upset. That's fine. But at least they walk away with something. And if they want to try and challenge that team again in the future, they've got something that they can say, all right, I'm going to go away and work on these things. Or they can go find a coach to help them with it so they can come back and have the best opportunity to make the team again. But linking everything to the six pillars for us has been quite successful.
Yeah, I think it's a really good way to do it because at least you've got something you can, even if it's a tick cross to start off with, like you can sit there and walk past and say, hey, yes, 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 no, no, cool. At least I know that puts them above the line on they've got four ticks and only two crosses, but we're looking at them for the fourth team. Like that doesn't quite line up. Yeah. Now we need to go and reevaluate that as to where they should be fitting.
Yep.
And then you can give more detail after that. Like I'm much the same as you. I saw a coach once that on the notes form just had green shoes. Like, that's not helpful. Like,
that's helpful in the beginning to remember the kid, I guess.
Yeah, but you've got to give me something tangible that if they come back and ask for feedback, well, I can at least give you something to go away and work on too. Yeah. So just have a little bit of understanding, I don't think goes astray from the coaching end too, that you know we've got to take into account the end user here, which is our players.
Mm.
And without players, we don't need coaches. So we need
We don't
players.
Need anyone.
Yeah, we don't need anyone.
We don't have players.
It ends right there. Yeah. You know, the no hat, no play. no players, no sport.
Play. Yeah.
Like it's kind of the same thing. So we do have to be really careful, I think, as well, just making flippant statements about kids and, oh, that kid's no good. Okay. Just because they're not good enough for your first team or second team doesn't mean they're no good. Mm. There's still some benefit that can maybe have a real impact in the threes or the fours. So those sorts of just like flippant comments I don't think are helpful.
Yeah, well, and having something like the six pillars or three pillars or whatever it is that you want to have also helps you remove any sort of bias that there may be.
Yep.
So it takes away the my coaches aren't allowed to say to me if they want to pick a kid in or want to push for a kid to either make a team or a program, they are not allowed to say to me, there's just something about her. If you can't actually verbalize to me what that something is, does it exist? So, again, what is it in the six pillars that is that something? Is it that they have an elite shooting ability or do they have – you know, it might just be their physical literacy is off the charts. They're 14 years old but they're – or 13 years old but they're 6'4". All right, that is something, you know. So those sort of things, but it goes the other way. You know, we have all worked with coaches in our programs before, particularly in a VJBL space because there are so many teams. There are always going to be people that have their bias and their, they like their kids and not necessarily their own kids, kids that they've worked with before or things like that. So having something like this can really eliminate that because you could look at it and if it is horribly biased towards a kid that you don't agree with, well, now you can go to that court, like if you're a DOC or a court, like an age group coordinator, or you can go to that court and watch it. And again, you've got something to link it back to go to that coach and say, I don't agree with you. I don't think this is right. And allow the kids that should be in that group to be selected.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is that coaches meeting straight after trials is always a really interesting one as well because it's almost like, okay, let's go around the room and it's almost like in, out tends to be the first one. And if you're the first or the second team coach, you can probably sit there and say in ones.
Yeah.
So you've at least got a little bit of clarity. It's difficult though to make sure coaches stay in their lane with that too. You don't want the sixth team coach necessarily saying, I don't think she picked that kid in the first team. You've got to make sure that you stay with that. And it flows onto how the courts are structured as well, because there are so many times when you look around, and you touched on it before, Zoe, where you've got a whole group of coaches sitting there watching the one court because that's where all the best kids are. And it's like, yeah, but only two of you are coaching this, but there are seven of you here. Who's watching the other ones where you'll actually have to pick some of those kids? Go and find out now which ones you would really like. And there are times, and I've done it as well, where I've walked down there and it's like, hey, I really like this kid. And they're like, yeah, but you're not getting them. They're going to be higher. All right, no worries. Line through that one. It's that sort of stuff. You can almost be disadvantaged through going and finding that diamond in the rough a little bit. It's like, oh, there is something about this kid. I really like how they shoot the ball. The decision-making is really good. Then you say it to the coach that's coaching high and they're like, yeah, there is. I'm going to take them. And it's like, oh, I should have shut up. I wanted that kid for myself. But you've done the right thing. Yeah, absolutely.
The kids landed where they should. So, exactly. But one thing with the, like you mentioned there about your coaches' meetings afterwards, I'd actually suggest reducing the amount of people in the room. So don't even have all of the coaches in the room at the same time. Yep. Ones and twos are together, then the threes coach comes in, then the fours coach comes in, then the fives, or however that works. Or you might go ones and twos, threes and fours, fives and sixes, and then bring them all in together. Just because I've been in those before, and I think one of the age groups, I think had something like 11 teams, and it was
it's a lot of opinions.
The selection meeting went for longer than the trial. Like it was so long because everybody wanted an opinion. And ultimately, it should be the head coach, the DOC, and if there's an age group coordinator.
Initially.
They are the ones that should be, and then, if you get other coaches. But when it comes down to actually making that selection, you can't have so much noise in the room because people will start to talk you out of it, not in a sinister way, but they'll say, I thought this kid was really good. Yeah. They did this and it just might be enough to go, hang on. And then again, makes the process go longer. So then that coach that's waiting in the fives or in the sixes is waiting even longer.
Yep.
So, I would reduce the number of coaches in the room.
And even when you're in that, just making sure you have a master sheet with clean data on it is important, because the amount of times, and I've seen it done before where it's been done electronically. So they've had a master list and they've been taking kids off the list to put them into teams and all that sort of stuff. But then someone doesn't copy or paste the right way and then you've missed a kid somewhere. Yeah. And it's like, my God, we picked five teams, but now this kid's back in because we'd forgotten about them and we'd left them on the list. Making sure you have someone in there that is going to be the voice of reason to be able to sit there and say, hold up, we've just left out our best kid of the age group because we all took for granted that someone was taking them and they haven't taken them, or whatever the case might be there. So making sure, as you say, clear communication as to how this is going to work. So I've seen it in places where it's like, okay, here's the list of kids. We've all got that list of kids in front of us. Great. First team coach, pick your team. Cut, paste, cut, paste. It's not copy and paste. I cannot stress this enough. Please do not copy and paste. It is cut and paste. They need to come off one list to go into another list. Just so you don't have this problem of, I can't remember which kid.
I can feel the trauma in your voice.
It has gone badly a number of times. This is why I come to these things and it's like, look, I love this time of year. I genuinely do. If you had to, someone asked me the other day, do I miss coaching state teams? It's like, actually, no, I don't. What I really miss is the team selection. Like, I love team selection and trying to sort of forecast and, hey, this could work with this and this could work with this. I love the week of nationals. I hate the prep work in between. I want to pick a team and I want to coach a team, but I don't like doing the stuff in between because that takes up all of my
work.
Where you have to do all the stuff. Oddly enough, as I get further and further away from it, I actually enjoy the prep work a little bit more than I used to do it when I was going through it. But it is one of those areas too, I think, where clean data matters.
Yep.
And making sure you don't have two kids by the same name, or you've got one kid in there as listed on the line number 17, but they're also again in number 84. It's like, hold on, we picked that kid. I'm not sure we did pick that kid. Have they come off the list? Has there been a double up somewhere? Those sorts of things. So just make sure it is cut and paste across and not copy and paste. If you're doing it electronically, same sort of deal. If you're going through your team lists and you have 10 lines across, say, six columns for your 10 players, but you might have 13 players you're considering for the first team still, make sure you leave those three lines blank in team two and you start from player number four. because there's this beautiful jam that happens when three kids miss out on the ones that go to the twos, but now three kids miss out on the twos that were going to the threes, but that now becomes six because you've got three coming down.
Because you've picked
now,
10.
Yeah, now six go down. But that now adds another team in there. So what you thought was maybe your sixth team is maybe your seventh team because kids just cascade down the line as well. So making sure you're across it in that space is it's just so vital. Yeah. Make sure good administrators are worth their weight in gold this time of year. Please look after your admins. Like, they are dealing with phone calls on the regular, emails continually, coaches that forget session plans or their texter runs out halfway through session number two of six during the day. Check in on your admin people.
Yeah.
Do you need a coffee? Can I get you some lollies? Like, can I get you something that can just take a little bit of the load off? Because they do it tough this time of year. They are dealing with everything under the sun.
Yep, so for sure.
The more you can look after them, the better. I did mention it before. I just realized how long we've been going for, and there's only two of us. So you're getting a real insight into, like, Gogglebox level stuff that Zoe and I go through weekly. Far less swearing than what we would normally do at home. But new segment this week called Social Sightings.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
All right. So these are the things that
that was better.
That was better?
That was
good. I know where the line is now. So this is just stuff we see on social media. Some of it good, some of it bad. Of course, the talking split stuff, always elite level content that is going out on that one with my horribly out of date social media skills. And like, so what's a reel? Like, you know, is that different to a post? Why is it not is it a story? Like, I'm terrible at all of this sort of stuff. So if there's a spelling error that happens on something that I post, very much my fault. I cannot find another way out of that. One of the things I saw, and it was actually I had something else planned for this, but it was as we were sitting here, I was just flicking through Instagram and saw one of the more ridiculous contraptions I've ever seen in my entire life, which was a headband that had a hand attached to it that would sit in front of someone's face and they were to practice shooting with that. And it was called Hand in Yo Face Basketball on Instagram. Not everything you see online is a good idea. Like, I'm sure it comes from a good place of, hey, you know, you got to take contested shots at times. You need to try and sight the ring. That's not one of them.
Yeah. I think if you're going to bother with something like that, find a teammate and play one-on-one.
Yeah. Like that, there's better ways to do this.
Yeah, you're not going to get better practice than that. But, I mean, at least they're trying something.
Yeah, look, I am – well, I've spent some cash over the years on shooting contraptions and apparatuses and all those sorts of things, like the disc you used to place on your offhand that was sort of like a frisbee that would sit there and it'd force you to shoot with one hand. I didn't mind that. I thought that was pretty good. The little like elbow contraption that would force your arm into an L shape so that you can shoot the ball. The wrist guards, the finger bridges that would keep the ball. Like, there's a market out there, obviously, for people
the
that
little
are
goggles
looking,
that stop you from looking down.
Those sorts of things. Yeah. Like, there's tons of stuff out there. But just because you see it out there does not mean it's a good idea. It's one of those things. Unless we've spoken about it, in which case, glorious idea. Yeah. Again, take everything with a grain of salt. Do what you need to do, but don't say you haven't been warned if it doesn't come out. So that wraps us up for this week. Zoe, thank you very much for jumping in once again.
Pleasure.
Covering for Coops. As always, you know, I'm sure you'll hear that and just, fair enough. Like, it'll be one of those things. Coaches, good luck with it. I know we're all a couple of weeks off from trials, but if you do need a hand with things, not team selection, don't hit me up about that. But if you need some ideas about some certain things or if you want to run a session plan, pass me to see if it's something that I would do or anything I would change. By all means, flick it through and I'll help you out as best I possibly can with that. But good luck. Next week is our players podcast. So, coaches, get out. We don't want to talk to you at all. No. You can obviously listen. But this is going to be for players next week about how you would attack a trial process. What are the things they would need to go through in those? So that's where we're at next week. Coaches, thank you all very much for jumping in and good luck with your coaching.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.